This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Karen McMurtry in Sarasota, Florida, and you are listening to a special Arabian episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 26th, episode 816. This episode today is brought to you by Hawks Flight Productions. Good morning, Horse World.
Well, hi, Karen. Welcome back to the show, and we hope everybody had a terrific Christmas.
Glenn, it was fabulous. I did not even get out of my Christmas jammies until about noon, cooking and drinking all day. It was great.
Yeah, we didn't do a lot either. We hung out with my brother and his wife, who live about a mile from us in the same development, so we always spend the holidays with them, and it's very laid back, and that's the way we like it. My wife and I, we don't make a big deal about presents for each other. We get each other some little stuff. We make sure we do that, but it's always just a laid back kind of quiet day.
Ours was not quiet with, the dogs, cats, kids, grandkids, and of course football in the background, but it was a great day. Great Christmas.
And, you know, we spent some time with our ponies, too. So we always try and do that on Christmas Day as well. So that's, I know that some horse people choose to not to. You know, they choose to take the day off from their ponies. We finally have time to spend time with our ponies. So
it's like, nice.
Yep.
Well, my horses never get the memo, the holiday memo, that it's a holiday. So we still come down and we feed, you know, we feed our breakfast and lunch. So we definitely see our horses during the day.
Well, and of
holiday
course,
or not.
We did not have a white Christmas where you and I live, unless you went out to the beach where you live, and then it is very white. But that's about the only place we see white Christmases around here is your beach at Siesta Key.
And that works for me. I moved from Pennsylvania, so I would never have to see that again.
Yes, and I moved from Pennsylvania, so I wouldn't have to do that again either. So we're on the same page. We are definitely on the same page. What are we talking about today?
Well, I think there's some interesting things we should talk about, like New Year's resolutions or the lack thereof, Glenn, since we are close to that.
Yeah, we certainly are a couple days away, and people better start thinking about their resolutions now.
Well, I have to say, and I'm going to toot my own horn here, that this is the first year that I actually followed through with a New Year's resolution.
Oh, we're going to have to hear about that later on.
Yes, nothing salacious.
I was just going to say, if we could talk about it.
Then
we're going to talk about breeding today, right? Isn't that the main topic of the day?
Yes, we actually are going to talk about what we need to do as Arabian horse breeders and other breeds to get ready for the breeding season, which kicks off in a few days, actually.
So,
and we have a guest, Karen Burke, who will be talking in greater depth about stallions and mares and what we need to do to get them ready.
What a fascinating woman she is. We had her on the Stable Scoop radio show a while back. She was talking about, she works with the South Koreans trying to develop a breeding program for horses over there. And it was a fascinating conversation. I'm looking forward to chatting with her again.
She's a well of knowledge, and she also at one point brought a group of Turkish veterinarians to our farm, and that was quite an adventure.
Nobody spoke English?
Very kind of slow on the interpretation, yes.
Yeah, okay.
It was a little rough.
But your horses could have probably spoken to them better.
I think they did understand what they were trying to say.
Yeah, that's probably true. You didn't need an interpreter for the horses.
They were a good group, but it was a little bit funny. A lot of gestures.
That's funny. All right. Well, let's get this show started. I wanted to remind everybody that we have a recorded episode for you tomorrow on Friday, so no really bad ads, no new really bad ads. And then we're back live on Monday again with Jamie. He'll be here and Jennifer will be here. So everybody's back on live on Monday again, and we'll have some fun shows for you next week as well. Well, coming up right now, you know, we're only a couple days away from New Year's, and you're either a person that makes resolutions or not, or you're one that did it in the past and gave up because you couldn't keep any of them. I read the other day that 46% of Americans make New Year's resolutions and 6% actually keep them. So now you said you made one last year and actually kept it. What was it? Can you tell?
Well, I can say this on air. I actually made two. One I was able to fulfill, which was to get organized, because Glenn, I had post-it notes everywhere with phone numbers, names, and I said, this is absolutely ridiculous. So I got a day runner. I put everything in that day runner, and I actually followed through on that resolution.
Wow, that's a hard
one. The second one I started, which is so cliche, losing weight. And I started out great, and then I dislocated my shoulder, and that was it. Forget it. So one out of two.
Like dislocating your shoulder forces you to eat. Darn it.
It sure did.
Yes. If I don't have my shoulder, at least I have food.
And drink.
It's funny how that works.
I know.
Well,
that
you know,
was my excuse.
I found on Vibe.com had a list of New Year's resolutions that never work. I hate to start off negative here, but these are the ones that people have a really tough time with. So let's you and I talk about which ones we've had in the past and whether we were able to do it or not. So, you know, and everybody's made these resolutions. Everybody's made resolutions at one time or another. I tend not to do them anymore because I forget about them. With my ADD, by the January 2nd, they're gone. So I've totally forgot I even made them, you know, so I don't bother anymore. The first is, you know, I think there's a difference too between, I don't know how you feel, but I think there's a difference between resolutions and goals. I'm pretty good at making goals. I actually have the goals for the Horse Radio Network on sheets of paper that you write on and then you can tear off, and they're sticky notes, but they're the huge wall size, and I have those on in the studio here right above my desk, so like advertising goals and shows and things like that are there. So but I think goals are different. I kind of think they're a little bit different than resolutions, don't you?
I absolutely agree with you, Glenn, and that's also why they say resolve for resolution versus making a commitment or making goals. I completely agree with you. They're very different.
And I think sometimes it's easier to make business goals, at least for me, it's easier to make business goals than it is to make personal ones. Because,
amen.
I don't know. Business seems like business, and personal is personal. It's harder to do personal because that always gets put on the back burner, you know? Which directly ties into some of the things we're going to talk about here. New Year's resolutions that never work. And getting in shape, you mentioned that one. That's one that everybody does. I love what they say here. You vow to put down the Twinkies and pick up a dumbbell, but you actually follow through? Of course not. Twinkies are just too delicious.
And thank God they're back on the market.
There you go. That's right. This is one everybody has to get in shape, and we all, you know, that have resolved this in the past. I say it's probably, what, a week or two before that one starts to fade away? That one's short-lived.
Well, I saw something funny, too, on the internet tying into the losing weight. I'm going to lose weight by starting to smoke. Great.
That's
picking up one bad habit for another.
They say most, I think it was something like almost 40% of new gym memberships are around this time of year. And by April, a lot of them have dropped off. So
I've seen that too.
They really count on this. This is also their Christmas if you own a gym. And then you hope that, you know, 10 or 20% of those people who join up this time of year actually stick with it.
Well, and also the Christmas presents of gym equipment. Yes. The treadmill.
Yes, the treadmill.
It gathers dust by the time April rolls around.
And, you know, now they're making treadmills with the TVs built in and that you place for your computer, so there's really no excuse anymore. The only one person I know, I have a friend, I'm Glenn the Geek, he's John the Geek. And John the Geek is a serious geek. He's much geekier than I am. And he actually has a treadmill that he does for almost an hour a day, but he has a TV and a computer right there on the treadmill. So he works while he works out, but he does it. I'm giving him credit. He's one of the very few I know that actually does it.
Wow. But, you know, I think that would be incentive for me. We could actually do the radio show.
Much too noisy. We can't do that.
Oh, darn.
Nah, I can't do it. Forget
there
it.
There goes that idea.
See how easy these resolutions are just to fail.
Well, there goes that. Yeah, we haven't even gotten to the New Year.
All right, getting in shape is out. We're not doing that one. Putting down the cigarettes. Well, I've never smoked, so this is not one that I can relate to a whole lot.
I tried it one time when I was in high school. Of course, that was back in, you know, the dark ages when everybody was smoking. One cigarette, and I was so green and sick. That was it. Cured me.
See? So, okay, we can't even talk about this, and we just can't relate, so we'll move on. Travel. You know, there's so many, travel is something that everybody says, I'm going to do more traveling. And travel is something that I think, you know, you can resolve to do, but there's a couple of things that come into play. One, your job, and whether you can get the time off, and two is money. So I think there's some limiting things. I think everybody would travel more if they had the money and time, don't you?
I totally agree. And then you also have to add in the factors like we have too many animals to leave the farm. I mean, to leave them to somebody responsible. That's tough, Glenn. I would love to travel more.
That is one big advantage to boarding your horses.
It
is really a big advantage is that you can pack up and go. But, you know,
you can have that resolution come true for you. Good.
We have more trouble finding people to take care of the dogs and cats than we do the horses. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know if other people have that trouble too, because we live in a horse community. So for people to take care of the horses, but nobody actually, you know, it's better when you have a greyhound that they actually go live with the babysitter. And, you know, that's tougher when you want to find somebody that will actually take your animal under their house for a week.
That is tough.
Now, we're lucky now. Our landlords absolutely love they live next on the same farm and really next door, and they love our dog, and their dog loves our dog, so our dog can now go on field trips down to their house when we're gone, and everybody gets along. So,
that works out.
Yeah, so that worked out really well. But travel is something that I think everybody would do if they had the time, the money, and, you know, it was easy to make happen. Who wouldn't? You know,
exactly.
But there's those little things that get in the way. Drink less. I'm not a big drinker, so I've never resolved to drink less, but I can understand why some people would resolve that. You're in a world, too. There are certain parts of the horse world, like drivers, not to throw them under the bus, but there's a lot of champagne and wine involved in driving. Fox hunters, I think, are the biggest drinkers.
Really?
But the Arabian world, I have seen the elaborate bar setups that are at these shows. You know, Arabian, they do know how to drink.
I will attest to that. That's very true. And the barn parties are famous.
Yes.
You know, people make the rounds at the shows, and everyone has a barn party, and it's great camaraderie and a lot of alcohol flows.
Yeah, there's probably not too many Arabian people that are vowing to drink less, so I think we can pretty much cross this one off the list.
Exactly.
Travel, I want to go back to travel for a second, too, and a lot of horse people have to travel for shows and things like that, and I think that's a little bit different than actually going on vacation, which is what we're talking about. But, you know, sometimes you do so much traveling for shows and things that a vacation is staying home and not doing anything. So that depends how much showing you actually do. The next
Go ahead.
I was going to say the next one is getting out of debt. And wouldn't we all like to do that once again? Okay, that's easy to say, right? I mean, but much easier to do in practicality.
Well, I love take control of spending. You have to have money to spend it. So
exactly.
There's one for me.
Exactly, yeah.
That's an easy one.
I think make more money comes before get out of debt.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
You really have to have it to pay the debt. It just never works any other way. So I think that one's kind of like, all right, great.
Yeah.
So pretty much we've eliminated every one of the lists so far. Better balance between work and personal life. I've always been kind of a workaholic. Now, we never had kids, so it allowed me to do that. And Jennifer's probably a bigger workaholic than I am. So we have had to really work at this one. And we're, you know, when you work at home, like we have for 25 years almost, with few exceptions, we've always worked at home. And people say, oh, it'd be so great to work at home. You know what it's like. You work more when you're at home and work's right there.
I absolutely 100% agree with you because, yes, I work, my business is here where we live. So I would love to have more personal time off the farm. But again, that's a little difficult.
It is.
But I would like to try that resolution. I'm up for that.
You know, and with horse people, you know, even if you have a job outside of the farm or outside of where you live, you come home, you have all the work to do around the barn yet. So you really, truly are working, you know, 100 to 110, 120 hours a week.
This is true.
There's always hay that needs put up and stalls that need cleaned and horses that need fed and horses that need brushed. And, you know, it all depends on whether you call that work or not, I guess, too. You know, whether that's part of your personal life. I think it depends on what your job is, whether that's in the horse world or not.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's one my wife and I have tried to work on and gotten much, much better at.
Good. So you did have a resolution that worked out.
Yeah, years ago we just looked at each other and said, you know, we're getting older and time's flying by and all we're doing is working. We really need to. So now when, you know, when we're taking the evening off and 5 o'clock rolls around and we decide to take the evening off, we do not check email anymore. You know, we just take the night off and actually walk away from the studios and the offices and just walk away. That's what you have to learn to do that. And that's tough to learn to do. You learn to do that over time, I think.
Well, don't you think, though, Glenn, with today's world, the technology of our smartphones, I just know for me, my business is email, Facebook, it's all the social media. And we're at, even when you do take personal time to go out, that phone is with you. And and you do have to kind of curb that of looking at that phone and responding while you're at dinner.
It's hard. It is hard. And you know, I've gotten better at it over time. And, you know, you're absolutely right. Technology has made less personal life and more work life. Even if you work for someone else, they're writing you emails, and for some reason they expect you to answer at 8 o'clock at night.
Yes.
You know, I think you have to set the precedent early on and not do that. If you never do it, then you're not. They don't expect you to.
Yeah, I think that's very valid.
Get organized. You did that one last year.
I did. Yay. Yay, I achieved something this year.
And for horse people, I highly recommend if you're going to get organized, there's an application. It's very inexpensive. Equisketch Records. Go check it out. They're one of our sponsors. It's on iOS only now, so you have to have an iPhone or an iPad. But check it out. It's an excellent way to keep track of your horses, your horse shows, your veterinary visits, your dentists, all that stuff. It gives you reminders, but it puts everything right on your phone and just makes it very easy to do. So as far as keeping track of your horses' lives and the lives and what goes on it with your students and your horse shows, it's a great app. Equisketch Records. Check it out. You know, getting organized is one I do every year. I do every day. I do every living moment. And I can honestly tell you whether I'm succeeding or not depends on the minute that I'm in. I think that's a minute by minute thing for a guy with ADD, whether you're succeeding or not.
Yes, my son, one of my sons has that. And I've lived that for a lot of years, vicariously or not.
Maybe that's why we get along so well. You know how to keep up with me.
I try, Glenn.
All the hosts now have learned how to keep me trying to keep me on track. Read more. You know, I don't know about you, but you know, I have a job where I'm on the computer all day. When evening comes, I don't want to read anymore. I just don't even read a book. I don't want to read anything anymore. I don't know. I don't know. I think Read More is one of those ones that's probably going out. And I listen to all my books now through Audible. So, you know, that's reading, technically.
Right.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, you're traveling, and you can listen to your audiobook.
Is this one passé now, do you think?
I'm going to step in and be very old fashioned here. I love to read books. My father gave me a Nook, and I hope he's not listening to the show, but I don't use it. I just like to hold a book, and I read at night. That's how I go to sleep.
You like the tactile thing with the pages and the, yeah. Well, I can understand that. I can understand that, definitely. I think I stopped reading at night when I went to bed when my eyes got so bad and you know, I needed the whole bifocal thing, and it was like a pain in the neck, and it was like, okay, I'm not reading in bed anymore. So, I think age put a kibosh on that for me.
I know.
Going to church. I know a lot of people make this resolution and do it. Church memberships probably go up the beginning of the year, too, and they probably last about as long as the gym memberships, wouldn't you think?
I agree. I think it's just for a lot of people now, holidays, you know,
yes.
special occasions.
That is true. And then volunteering, I actually do that. I volunteer with the Red Cross. I wish I could spend more time. Time is a problem with it, but I'm still active with the Red Cross. I still do shelters when necessary. One of my jobs with the Red Cross is helping to open shelters. Fortunately, we didn't need a lot of those in Florida this year. I only was on one shelter this year due to fires, but fortunately, we didn't have any hurricanes come through, but I was ready, so that is one thing that I've been doing for 15 years is working with the Red Cross.
That is just such a tremendous organization. I worked with them quite a bit when I was with past life in forensics. And the Red Cross, they're just amazing people. So, hey, that's thrilling that you do that.
Well, you know, 99% of the people involved with the Red Cross are volunteers. And some of those people will give up huge amounts of time. They give up tons of time, and I admire them for doing that. And someday I want to get more involved as I can put less time into the businesses and more time into that kind of thing. I would like to volunteer more for them because I would like to go on some deployments overseas and things like that for disasters overseas, which I've never done before. So I'm hoping that at some point I can get to that point.
You are a brave soul, Glenn, to go overseas in today's world, or want to.
Well, you know, usually when the Red Cross is going in, one of their keys is keeping everybody safe, and, you know, they're not going into war zones usually. They're going into situations like the, you know, hurricanes and floods.
Tsunamis.
Tsunamis where it's not, you're not being shot at. So that's a good thing. We probably have a better chance of being.
You're not going to be shot at, Glenn. Okay.
We probably have a better chance of being shot at here in the United States. In some of those situations that we do over there. But all right. Well, that's our resolutions. Pretty much, we've crossed everyone off the list, so we don't have to make any. We're done.
Amen. I'm tearing up my list.
We don't have any left. We don't have to bother. Why bother setting ourselves up for disappointment?
Exactly.
Well,
wait, let me get my Bloody Mary out of the fridge now.
So much for the drink less.
And my Twinkies.
Yes, that's right. All right, let's talk about breeding because that is one of the things. Now we're getting on to goals, you know, business goals. Because one of the things as a breeder that you guys have to do is take a look at the beginning of every year and what's coming up in the next year. And how much of really looking and planning a year ahead is it important to you in the breeding business?
It's essential. It's just, you know, it's the life and breath of how successful your breeding program is. And by that, I mean, you know, being in touch with what's going on with your mares and your stallions, paperwork, you know, communication, organization. I mean, planning is critical. And there are many facets to that, Glenn, from, you know, like I said, mentioned paperwork. Like this weekend, I'll probably be sitting down and printing out my files for my breeding season, which starts, you know, when I say starts, what we start doing now when January rolls around in a few days is we start to work with our stallion. And that means I have to have a folder that's collection history, 2014. Which takes down all the information anytime we collect them, whether it's for a clean-out collection or to ship semen across the United States or for our own mares, we have a record of everything that is done on that particular collection. Same thing with our mares. We do mare assessment folder. So as they are, as we're teasing them, if they're open and we're going to be breeding them in 2014, we have certain criteria that we have on our sheet of paper that we, you know, document what we're seeing, date, time, et cetera. And then we have,
so you basically
actually
keep a diary on the mares and the stallions.
Yes, we do. And every year we have, you know, we refresh those files and start new ones. But we have five babies coming, so I'm very excited about that. And we have a foaling file, so every time one is born, we put down all the pertinent information for that. And
now,
that's kind of the paperwork end.
Does it matter with you guys, you know, like the thoroughbreds try and have all their babies as close to January as possible because their calendar year, as far as age is concerned. With you, does it matter what time of year you have that baby?
It's very similar, and so the answer is yes. We try to have them between January and May. Also, when they go in the ring, they go in by age, and there also are age groups. So even babies that are born late in the year, they still have a chance of competing against babies that were born early in the year. But, you know, again, it's very weather-driven. I mean, if you're living in Wisconsin and you have winter through June, like some of them, you know, I think they did this year, it's hard because the mares aren't cycling.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the ideal time is January through May for Arabian.
Nor do you want to have a baby out there when it's minus 20. I mean,
no kidding.
that doesn't sound like much fun either for anybody. Why don't we bring our guest on and add her to this conversation as we start to learn a little bit? I'm excited to learn a little bit about breeding and how it all works because I don't know a lot about it. So why don't you introduce our guest and we'll get her on.
Sounds wonderful. Our guest today is Karen Burke. She is the owner-operator of Equine Reproductive Services in Ocala, Florida. And Glenn, every time I have a conversation with Karen, I learn something new. She is not a veterinarian, but she's had, you know, a long, long time of dealing with horses, in particular Arabians, but she also stands other breed stallions. And what I find with her is if you have a problem with a horse, if she can't figure it out, then there are very few people who can. I have
very
a lot of
good.
Faith in her.
All right. Well, and she lives up my way in Ocala.
She does.
Right? Yeah, she lives
here
in Ocala.
Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Karen.
Okay.
All right. No
same
more
name.
With guests with the same name. That's just too confusing.
Sorry, Glenn.
Can we just call her Burke?
She is I-N, I am E-N.
That's true. You're E-N, she's I-N.
Totally different, Karen.
We can call her Burke. That's what we'll call her, Burke.
There you are. So our topic today, well, actually, we've had several topics so far this morning, Karen, but the topic is we want to talk about with breeding is what we need to do to prepare mares and stallions for the upcoming breeding season, which is January starts in a few days. And so I wanted to kind of pick your brain and hear what you have to say, in particular, because we have a stallion. Maybe we could start with that on what you think we should be doing to get him ready for the breeding season.
Okay, perfect. Well, this is a very fortuitous time, and I'm glad you mentioned stallion because most people think when they're preparing for breeding season that they're preparing the mare, feeling that the stallion's always ready. And although they think they're always ready, they may not be in a couple of different directions. First of all, we call this at the beginning of the year a breeding soundness exam that we like to do on both our mares and our stallions. The stallions are just as important to do as the mares are. There's a number of things that could be a problem that you want to avoid and make sure everything is absolutely ready on usually around February 1st when we do our first breedings. One of the first things to do is clean him out, which simply means if you're collecting him versus live cover, you should do one or two collections first, and it literally cleans out the pipes, gets rid of any dead cells, old smegma, anything like that. You want to clean the stallion at this time.
So we basically get the cobwebs out?
Absolutely. Okay. That's all right. Exactly.
So yes. So the same time we clean the barn, we clean the stallion.
Yeah, if you have more than one person helping. At this time, you can actually clean the genitals using like an ivory soap, or there's a good product called Excalibur that is a sheath cleaner. We don't like to use any actual cleaning material when we're actually doing the breeding. There could be some leftover chemicals and things. So anything that you have to do more of, you want to do that ahead of time. So these cleanups are a perfect time for that. You want to use some soft, sterile cotton sheeting, warm water. They definitely like actually almost hot water, gently cleaning the sheath and the penis and inside. Hopefully your stallion allows you to do this. You may need, in certain cases, a professional like a veterinarian to lightly tranquilize them if there is any problem. And check for what's called the bean in the urethra. Remove that.
Let's stop right there. What is the bean?
The bean is a collection of smegma that collect in the urethra fossa, and like a pearl, it gets larger and larger in there, and it can be a place of irritation for a stallion. And it pops out really easy. Some are softer than others, but it is a regular cleaning that should be done, not only on stallions, but geldings too. It helps quite a bit. And it's good for your stallion to be used to having his penis handled, cleaned, and examined at any time. Because even during a live cover, they can bruise the phallus, and you can see this very easily. And if you need to examine, sometimes live cover, they can get a hair or something of that nature around them and hurt them. So being able to handle your stallion's penis is always a plus and a safety measure.
Our veterinarian here on the show, Dr. Jones from Florida Equine, always likes to gross me out by telling me the story of the bean she came across the one time that was the size of a golf ball. Yeah, and so she likes to tell that story, and I always have to cut her off before she tells what she actually did about it. So, because people are actually eating breakfast now. So,
oh my God. Well, I haven't seen anything that big. A large to me is the size of a lima bean, if anybody wants to do a visual.
This is sexy talk for the morning, isn't it?
Yes. Sometimes, well, think of a coffee bean. sometimes it's not even hard. It can be rather gummy also, fairly soft. But it's easy to get out and doesn't hurt them at all to get it out. After doing a couple collections, my suggestion is always, and with our stallions, it's a constant, we do a culture of the stallions also. We ask that our mares be cultured in cytology and be clean. I think it's the right of a mare owner to also ask it of the stallions, are your stallions clean? So it is routine at my farm, Equine Reproduction Services, that every stallion prior to breeding season, December and January, get a couple clean-out collections and then have a culture done. I normally only do a semen culture, and if they are particularly dirty or if they have live covered at all, then we do a culture of the urethra and the fossa.
What are they looking for? What are you looking for? Or shouldn't I ask?
No, absolutely. Stallions can pick up pathogens very easily. Actually, this is an outside appendage. It's going to get dirty. And things like staph, strep, Klebsiella, Pseudomonas, there's a lot of different things that a stallion can get.
So it's like VD in horses.
Yes.
Oh.
But also Pseudomonas and in some instances Klebsiella can come about from water, overwashing, and also from shavings. So they don't even have to cover a mare to possibly have that. If you wash a stallion too much, then you leave it wide open for bacteria to get into there because we take away all their good bacteria.
So being too clean is a problem too, then?
Absolutely. In a normal circumstance, I never wash my stallion's penis and clean it more than about once a week. If they're breeding heavily, you certainly don't have to do it more often. Just before each collection, we do it.
Now let's say
then we're just using warm water.
If Karen, if any of those pathogens do show up on the culture, would then that be transmitted to the mare through, you know, ship semen or through breeding? And if so, what's the outcome of that? It doesn't sound good.
Now, it is possible, but improbable on ship semen. It's one of the beauties of ship semen. We add extender to the semen, and one of the components of the extender is antibiotics. So different extenders carry different antibiotics, whether it's a penicillin derivative, pimentin, ticarcillin, genicin, and they kill pretty much everything. So it actually makes it a safer situation than a live cover. But the problem being, it can cause damage to the sperm cells themselves. If, as the semen is passing through the penis, their pipes, so to say. The pathogens can cause a problem with the sperm cells, slow them down, make them spin, and lower their viability. So if you have a problem with your stallion catching mares, one of the first things we do is we definitely culture them. The nice part is, in almost every case, this is extremely easy to cure. Like in all cultures, we ask for a sensitivity and resistance test, same on the mares. So when we find out that, let's say that this horse has Klebsiella, it will tell us what that horse is resistant to, which means these are drugs that will not work on this, and what they're sensitive to, which means use this and it will kill it quickly.
Great. So there's hope.
Normally, in a 2-3 day time period, it is completely cleaned up. So
that's encouraging.
What I call good horse keeping.
So I was going through some of my notes on questions I wanted to ask you, and the rainbow penis, that term came up. Can you please explain what that is?
It's a term some veterinarians use on mostly on older stallions, that as they age, instead of the erect penis being straight, it gets a curve to it, which makes it difficult on live cover and difficult sometimes on collection, too, because the penis has that kind of a curve to it. Even if they enter the mare, they may not be pressing against the cervix. So during a live cover, the sperm never is deposited directly into the uterus as it is with artificial insemination. The stallion's penis grows larger and flares out, and it literally forms like a toilet plunger. And as they're pumping, it pushes the semen through the cervix because the penis never goes through itself. If it is curved around, often the sperm cells, the semen, is not deposited close enough to the cervix to force it open and get it into the uterus. And there's not too much that can be done with that. But again, it's something that as your stallion ages every year, to be observant with. And also, one of the other things is, as they age every year, you should be handling their testicles enough to see if they're getting smaller, if you're getting soft spots, similar to a soft spot in a tomato that's bruised. stallions after the age of 13 develop testicular degeneration. It is a normal situation that each year they degenerate a little bit more until they're done. Yet some stallions can go on late into their 20s. It just depends. And some of that, their longevity is hereditary. You see some strains and breeds that breed for many years and others that they're kind of done by their late teens.
Well, I will tell you, Karen, that I am actually terrified of our first few times collecting our stallion, Amir. He'll be 22 on January 15th. Because I always worry, and his grandfather, and I know this has, you know, happened several times to very famous stallions, as they're being collected or after they have bred a mare, they die. They have a stroke and die. So that's always in my mind. And I'm praying that, you know, we can have him for many more years. But have you seen that yourself or heard
the
of that?
The only time that I've really seen that is in situations where the horse is not fit, extremely overweight. I have seen it in halter horses, in the stock horse breeds. I've known that to happen on a number of occasions, that they care more about their weight and looks than their reproductive efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that common. It's not something to worry about. I see more of that kind of thing, young stallions, and I had that happen this year. One stallion, a 5-year-old warm blood we were training, the first 3 or 4 times we collected him, and as soon as he ejaculated, he passed out cold and fell off the mount. And he was out
cold. Oh, lovely.
Now, 30 to 45 seconds seems like an absolute eternity when you have a 1,700 to 1,500-pound horse laying there half upside down. And his eyes would just roll back in his head, and that was it. Sweet dreams. And he got up and shook himself off like, that was cool. Can we do this?
Man, there's a lot of guys that would like to have that kind of bliss.
We actually have photographs of this. We weren't laughing because it could be dangerous, but that is not unheard of at all.
That's the ultimate enjoyment right there, boy.
I get it. Absolutely.
All right, so I won't be so paranoid then.
No, that happened to me with a great stallion, Russian stallion, Patron, or they called him Patroni. Mm-hmm. And he was known to pass out.
Boy, the first time that happens to you, though, you must think your horse just had a heart attack and died. I mean, talk about freak out.
Well, when you're experienced, you know that it can happen. If an inexperienced breeder could be a problem. It brings up another excellent point here. A large enough breeding shed area. Most people do not imagine how large a breeding shed for collection needs to be safe both for the handlers and the stallions.
I got to tell you, when the first time we took a tour in Lexington when we lived there of some of the big, I think it's Three Chimneys, and their breeding building, and I was shocked at how big the room was.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, but when you see one of these monster horses, you know, playing around or on one side or moving quickly or trying to get to the mare, you appreciate the extra room to be able to maneuver around.
Just for your own safety, if nothing else, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Karen, how big is yours?
Which Karen?
There's two Karen.
Karen with an I.
It's a very good size area because we actually, it's in the same dimension as our wash rack and grooming areas, but we also have, you know, you have to have your tees, we have a tees wall and the breeding dummy. Our thing that we had to worry about when we were building it is, okay, is the ceiling height. Because we had to, like, we actually had to, like, measure so that, okay, if our stallion's rearing up, where would he be? Where is his head? So that was fun, but it's a good size and it's safe. And as Karen said, you have to have maneuverability because it doesn't always go like you planned for it to go.
Right.
And you need to be able to get out of there quickly. 30,
About a 36 by 36 area with a quite high ceiling. And as I said, I'm a little different because my facility handles all breeds. So I can have a pony, 1 hour, a draft horse, a 17-2 warm blood. You know, you never know what's going to walk in next. So we have to cover our bases and everything.
Karen, I had someone knowing that you were going to be on the show send me an email with a question about mares, switching now from stallions to mares, but about the light, about putting them under lights. And okay. The questions were, how many lights should you have? When should you start doing that? You know, how does that process work?
So, Karen, what are you talking about with lights and what do they do?
Well, the lights have to do with the all horses' natural endocrine system, which is the fuel to their reproduction system. A mare needs to be, in order to cycle, they need 14 hours of light per day, no more than 16 hours. But you really need to be as close to that 14 to 16.
Is that trying to replicate, I'm just guessing here, I'm going with logic, I assume then that is because a mare would naturally want to get pregnant in the summertime, so you're trying to replicate those longer days?
Exactly.
Oh, I guess
the
right.
Natural breeding time for mares is May, June, and July.
And we're pushing that. We're pushing that into winter, which is abnormal then.
Right, exactly. Okay. We've decided, because we want to show horses or make silly rules about them all being born in January, that we need to get them close to that. And it really is counterproductive. The mare is triggered to have a productive cycle by the hours of daylight. And we replicate that by putting them under regular incandescent lights. You do not need a lot of light in the stall. It can even be a 40-watt light bulb. Universities have shown that as long as you could sit anywhere in that stall and read a newspaper, you have enough light. It doesn't have to be blaringly bright. Curiously, even a blind mare still gets the significance of the light. And I'd like to explain, because everybody knows lights and has no idea what it is doing. Light enters the eye and hits the endocrine gland behind the eye called the pineal gland. The pineal gland produces melatonin. The melatonin then travels to the next endocrine gland and produces the next hormone. And there is a series that produce one hormone after another, and they trigger the follicle-stimulating hormone and the luteinizing hormone, which is needed to produce and ovulate the egg. So without that, they will cycle, but they will not ovulate. They will not produce a viable follicle until they do get enough light. So we are just recreating the circumstances of late spring, early summer.
Got it. Okay.
Great explanation. Thank you.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, before we go on here to the next thing, and I can honestly say that on this particular show, we have never talked about man bits for as long a period of time as we have this morning. So I'm just saying, that's a first here on Horses in the Morning. We are with Karen. Of course, it's Arab Day, as we do once a month, and it's perfect timing right after Christmas to be talking about breeding, because there are probably more babies conceived during these holidays than any other, so it's perfect. Human and otherwise. But we're going to take a break. And I was thinking about what song to do today. And we had an earlier conversation about one of the things that are as a New Year's resolution for people is to drink less. And then after this particular conversation, it's making me want to drink more. So the song today I'm going to do is Templeton Thompson's Stillhouse Jane, which is one of my favorites anyway, all about making booze. We'll be right back.
Jane, stay out of the still house. Jane, stay out of the still house. Don't you go bottle. I know you love the way it makes you feel. Fills you up with whiskey wisdom, takes away your inhibitions. Trouble finds you there and always will. So Jane, stay out of the stillhouse. Jane, stay out of the stillhouse. I know you love that sweet Virginia corn. When sipping turns, turning up the jug, you don't know when enough's enough. And girl, the crazy things you do. So I'm begging you, Jane, stay out of the stillhouse. Jane, stay out of the stillhouse. I know you love that sweet Virginia corn. Oh, Jane, stay out of the stillhouse. Jane, stay out of the stillhouse. Don't you go around there.
Well, we're back here on Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek. I am here with Karen McMurtry from Sarasota, Florida. It is Arab Day here, our once-a-month look at the Arabian breed. And today, partly because Karen is a breeder, and we have never talked much about this on the show, so it's a fascinating conversation, we are talking about breeding with a fellow Ocalian here. Is that a word, Ocalian? Karen,
it is now.
I believe so.
Just made it up. We're speaking with Karen Burke of Ocala, and you are with, if I remember correctly, Equine Reproductive Services in Ocala, right?
Equine Reproduction Services, but that's
reproduction. Okay. Got it. I got close. And Karen actually has been on the Stable Scoop show with us a little while back talking about breeding in South Korea. So it's always a fascinating conversation. Well, take it away, Karen McMurtry.
Thank you, Glenn. And I'm glad you didn't pick Tiny Bubbles for that song.
Well, there were a few that I could have picked that we just couldn't play on the air. So,
yeah. Well, Karen, talking about the mares and continuing along those lines, we talked about the stallion and breeding soundness. And the mares, there's a huge focus, obviously, on the mares' performance and breeding soundness. So if you could go into a little bit about that area, that would be helpful.
Absolutely. I preach doing early breeding soundness exams on mares, which means start in December. If they're under lights, I put them under lights mid-November to Thanksgiving and continue on with that. My reasoning for doing my breeding soundness exams in December and early January is if there is a problem, we can fix it before it's time to breed. If we feel that we need a biopsy on an older mare, we can get that done and give them that extra 30 days to heal before we're breeding them. So it's always best to be pre-informed and have a clean bill of health, hopefully, or take care of everything so that prior to your first breeding cycle, you do have a clean bill of health. There's different protocols and different depths of the breeding soundness exam. On every mare, I feel that at a minimal, a rectal palpation, a cervical check, and also an ultrasound are absolutely paramount. And added to that, of course, the culture and psychology. You should never get a culture alone. You should always do a culture and psychology with, again, a resistance and sensitivity test. Once this is done, if you have a clean bill of health, you're in good shape. You know that you're ready to go, and you're not wasting time and money, because if you want to chance it and get a collection first and your mare doesn't take, that there's a lot of money per cycle, especially if you're shipping semen, vet costs and everything else. So get it done in December and January, and you're way ahead. Another time that you use a breeding soundness exam, I recommend that anyone buying a mare, even for performance, if you're not planning on breeding right away or whatever, still, as part of your pre-purchase agreement and vetting, always on a mare, do an ultrasound. There's many mares that do not perform well because they have very difficult cycles. You don't know if the saddle, it's not just the saddle bothering them. They could have cystic ovaries. There could be a lot of problems. So when purchasing a mare, you always have to think at some point this is going to be a breeding animal. Make sure that the factory works. Everything there is in good shape. If you get a mare that for no reason doesn't cycle, or is silent, you might even want to go ahead and do a hormone panel on them, because these are all things that not only will affect their breeding future, it can also affect their current performance.
Now, when you do a hormone panel, do you have to do that at a certain time? In other words, do they have to be in season, or does it matter when you do that hormone
panel? No, you can. It is blood, and you can have that pulled any time. And it will give a large range of hormones that are involved and tell you if everything is not only good, but they are working in unison. Some mares have thyroid problems. The pituitary not only controls the thyroid, but it's also your follicle-stimulating hormone and luteinizing formula. So that's very, very important to make sure that that's running in good harmony. That can be done anytime. It's a simple blood test.
Okay.
Now, when you're doing a culture and cytology, that should only be done when the mare is cycling. Because at that time, the cervix is open. You do not have to force your way in, because you have to take that sample from inside, from a portion of the endometrium inside the uterus. During a heat cycle, the mare's uterus puts out antibodies. When the mare is not in heat, there are no antibodies. So if you force your way in, you can also be forcing in a pathogen, and there's no way for the uterus to protect itself. So unless an emergency, we try never to do our testing when they are not cycling.
Okay. Great information. I wanted to kind of tie back in mares and stallions. Does the age of the mare and stallion affect the quality of the foal?
Not necessarily, but there have been university testing on this. And they've done a large sampling of horses at different universities. What they have found, it's a known fact that a mare is born with a certain amount of eggs, and that's all that they have. They don't produce them. They don't regenerate. So a 25-year-old mare literally has old eggs. The ovum is not the same. And not saying that champions have not been born out of aged mares. Of course, mm-hmm. that happens. But the in general, it is not at the best. The same with a stallion, it has been proven that, and this I find very interesting, that the best foals are born when a stallion is under the 12 to 14 year mark.
Really?
It's interesting. Yes. It's the interesting thing is that most people say, oh, well, the stallion is producing better and better every year. Well, it's not that he's producing, but in the early years, even if a stallion has just won a world championship, they're not necessarily brought the best mares to them. And yet, if they're producing tops, they get better and better. It's after a stallion has produced so well that better and better mares come to them. So by the time a horse is 15 years old and has produced a lot of world champions, they are offered into their breeding program world champion mares that they didn't have when they were younger. But it was those not-so-great mares that still produced great that gave them the reputation.
So it's not a physiological issue with the stallion.
No, but it is true. Like, what we suggest on frozen semen is that when an owner freezes semen from their stallion, they keep the semen that was from his younger years for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is not necessarily the best quality, but usually the best foals come out of that.
Okay.
Now, saying thus, that there's no hard rules here, but there is university research on that.
All right.
It would not stop me from breeding an aged stallion. And like you with Amir and another stallion you have, if that's 27 years old, that is breeding phenomenally, producing excellent.
Yeah, that is very exciting. I don't see anything diminished there.
No.
If we can pat ourselves on our backs.
Yes. Well, and, of course, the physical care of the stallion means so much. An aged stallion has to be almost taken better care of, excellent nutrition, excellent care of teeth and hooves. There's just so much, you know, you want to keep them fit that just like ourselves, as our bodies age, that the better, you know, the better we eat and the better care, how many times we go to the gym, you know, keeps us doing better.
That sounds closely like our New Year's resolutions that we threw out, Glenn.
Yes, it does.
For ourselves.
Yes. Well, I wish I took care of myself as well as I do my horses.
Yeah, I think that's probably true of 99% of horse people.
Yes.
Well, these would be business goals.
They eat better than we do.
Yes, getting back to, again, another question that actually someone else emailed to me, which is interesting. Breeding, like Clydesdale stallions to pony mares, vice versa. Is there an issue with that?
Many people are fearful, and I hear this all the time. I have to take a stallion that's not too big for my mare, and I don't want her to have what's called a dystocia because the baby is too big. The word dystocia means a malpresentation of the foal for delivery. Usually one has nothing to do with the other. Certainly if there's been cases where a foal is so large that a mare cannot pass it, but it's very unusual. There's been, again, many university studies, and one private study that I've been involved with for 20 years where ponies have been bred with draft horses for 8 generations. And that's putting draft horse into pony mares. And never in one case of over a few hundred has a mare ever had a problem delivering the baby. The baby only grows to the size of the mare's uterus. It is then born and after birth grows to its genetic size.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you have an average 15-2 horse and you want to breed to a 17-hand stallion, there should not be any problem at all as long as the mare is completely healthy. I might consider a maiden I would be a little bit more careful with, but other than that, there's no problem whatsoever.
Very interesting. I think a lot of people had that question in their mind. Is can the mare's uterus accommodate that safely and have a viable foal down the road? So you're saying yes.
Yes. Karen, that brings up another subject we haven't talked about that I just thought about. Reasons for ultrasound after the culture. Many people I have found are not ultrasounding their mares to check for ovulation after breeding, and in particular, just waiting to see if the mare doesn't come in season that they're in foal instead of spending the extra money. It is terrifically important to check for twins, and it's the only way. And usually, you need 15 to 16 days. You can pinch a twin without any problem. And that will save a mare's life.
How common are twins?
Especially in thoroughbreds, very common. And once a mare twins, she's liable to do it all the time. There's no splitting of an egg. It always comes from two separate follicles on horses. So we don't have any identical twins. So when you're ultrasounding during your cycle, you are seeing if you have two follicles that are ripening at the same time. And also when you do an ovulation check, which is the day after they're supposed to ovulate, you can see that ovulation very clearly on an ultrasound, because instead of it being like a large black area of the follicle, it turns a silver color on the screen. If you see two, you know you're going to have twins, and you can start checking to see. Many, many times it will dissolve itself, one of them. But you absolutely, it just breaks your heart to lose a horse just because nobody knew that there was a twin there.
Well, I actually have an interesting side note or side story that goes along with this. Last year, and we always do ultrasound. We ultrasound before we breed to see what size follicle we're looking at and time our breeding accordingly. And we had bred one of our mares. We did the ultrasound, and there are two big embryos, exactly the same size, side by side. And we had to count down the days holding our breath, and we, you know, would ultrasound her like every 4 or 5 days, and we were at that last ultrasound where we were going to have to pinch one off, and one had disappeared. So we were not forced to do that, but we were biting our nails. And I know it can be done, but, you know, usually, from what I understand, you can lose both of them with that procedure.
Yes, absolutely. And so, again, it's good horse keeping. Spend a little bit of extra money, do it right, save a lot of money and a life in the long run.
Well, we also had, that was the good story we had. And again, as breeders, you just never know. It can be heartbreaking, it can be joyful, but it can be heartbreaking. We had a mare who's actually produced champion for us, U.S., Canadian, and national champion. And we bred her, we ultrasounded her. She's kind of a beast. We checked her in full, and there was a beautiful baby. And my vet is very meticulous about scanning everything, and particularly with this mare, because we don't like have to go back and recheck her because she's a little bit nasty. And there was a beautiful baby, and everything was fine. Progesterone was wonderful. She foals usually around day 329 of gestation. About day 300, she started bagging up and dripping milk, and my vet was concerned a little bit about placentitis, so we started to treat that. And I came down, it was probably day 310 in the morning to feed, and there were dead twins in the stall with her.
Hmm.
Never saw them on the ultrasound.
They
were, I think, 4 or 5 days from being viable where they could have survived because their lungs would have been developed enough.
Now, the difference between 310 and 315, also, when you're counting dates like that, from the time of ovulation, it can take as much as 48 hours for actual conception. So that 310 might have actually been a 308.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say. And in certain cases, you cannot see the one behind the other, and when you have two follicles, you have to be diligent. And our vets are human. We try our best. We hope for the best, but sometimes it's just not safe.
Well, Karen, we are plain running out of time in this segment, so I don't know if there was anything else you wanted to get to here before we...
The only other thing we didn't talk about is progesterone, and Karen just brought it up. I highly suggest at your 15-16-day pregnancy test to do a progesterone test that is called a P4 test, and it's not expensive. It's just some blood work, and it will tell what the mare's progesterone level is. It needs to be higher than a 4.0 for the fetus to survive. If it is less than that, we need to supplement them with a product called Regimate, that is a synthetic progesterone, and you can continue to test for that, and you get your actual progesterone level, because since that's a synthetic, what you're giving them doesn't show up. Usually, you have to keep them on that for 90 to 100 days to ensure the pregnancy, but it is an extremely useful tool, especially on older mares.
Well, Karen, thank you so much for joining us this day after Christmas, and we really appreciate all of your input, and I hope to see you down here in a few weeks.
Absolutely. This has been my pleasure.
Karen, is there a website for you?
Yes, it is www.frozen-semen.com. I specialize in freezing stallions of all breeds. Both for U.S. and international. And
how many
we have a great Facebook page, too.
How many hits do you get that are people not looking for horse semen? Must get a ton of them.
Actually, none at all.
Really?
Believe it or not, yes.
That's shocking.
I know that's amazing, but maybe they just shy away from it.
I guess.
But again, you know, anyone can reach me on Facebook. It's either Karen Sue Burke or ERS, Equine Reproduction Services, and we do free consultations and answer questions, and love to hear from anyone.
Well,
very
many
good,
thanks
Karen.
Again, Karen.
Thank you.
Very, very welcome.
Well, that was a fascinating conversation, and as I said, that's the longest we have ever talked about that particular topic on the morning show or any of the shows on the Horse Radio Network.
Well, I'm glad that you didn't, sound the beep or bleep things out, and I kept waiting for something to happen, Glenn, and just forged right ahead with that scientific information.
The listeners will know I was a little uncomfortable in some of those point sections, but the last thing I like talking about, and everybody knows this, so they do it on purpose, is sheath cleaning, because that's my wife's job. I don't get into that. So, I have never done it and will never do it. I will pay somebody to do it before I will do it. So everybody knows, I'm sure all the listeners were going, Glenn's loving this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for handling it so well.
I just kept my mouth shut. Hawks Flight Productions. What is Hawks Flight Productions?
Hawks Flight Productions was born out of a venture that I was approached by a friend who said, you should really write, this is like a reality show here at your farm. It's crazy. They had just come over to spend some time, and of course it was a normal crazy zone. And so they said, you should write a reality show about this. So I was actually informed that there was a contest called TV.me. This was a year and a half ago. And I wrote a script based on our breeding farm, Arabian breeding farm, and entered it. And actually, we placed third out of,
oh, wow,
a huge category of reality TV shows. So I decided to kind of take it a step further, Glenn, and I formed Hawks Flight Productions with my partner, Phil Chocio, who is a Ringling Art School professor. And we formed a website and a company. The company is Hawks Flight Productions. The website is www.hf, as in Hawks Flight, hfladysnickers.com. And we were doing weekly, what we call webisodes, which are videos about life on our farm. And we stopped production for a few months because we just were overwhelmed with other things. But we're actually now in the process of filming new webisodes, new season series. And we have a really exciting, speaking of breeding, a really exciting breeding project that we're going to be starting in March that we're doing a documentary about.
Huh, interesting.
News to follow.
Oh. Okay, so that's all we get?
That's all you get.
Now, you said you're, can we mention that you're going to be doing a Kickstarter or something with this?
Yes, actually, the crowdfunding is really just enticing for many reasons. There are several out there. Kickstarter, I think, is the king of the hill.
The most popular one, yeah.
It really is. And then there's Indiegogo. But actually, we're right. going to be placing this project on Rocket Hub.
Never heard of that one.
Yes, it's actually affiliated with A&E, as in Duck Dynasty. And are always looking for new projects. The CEO...
As in, unfortunately, Rodeo Girls, too. So we won't mention that one. Yes, yes.
Yes, yes. Yeehaw.
Yeah. Are we going to have girls in bikinis riding Arabians? Is
Absolutely.
That the
actually, oh, good. Gauzy costumes, I think.
Oh, that would be great. Yep.
Gauzy costumes. And glitter and bling, yes.
Okay, yeah. That's better than bikinis, probably.
Yes, but actually, we're really looking forward to it because we have a lot of fun with this. And I actually just contacted Gator Boys because we're going to try to work out one of our episodes with them.
I'm just checking out Rocket Hub. I'd never been to it. We go through about once every 2 weeks on the show, and we'll talk about whatever horse projects are on Kickstarter or Indiegogo, and we'll discuss them a little bit about whether they're going to make it or not. And but I had never seen this one.
Well, this one had a very exciting project. There was an attorney who was actually just fired up about creating a new running shoe, a new athletic shoe. And he put his project on, I think it was Rocket Hub, and he got his funding, and then he wanted to take it one step further, and he designed his shoe for Duck Dynasty. And his goal was $100,000 to create this Duck Dynasty shoe, of course, in pink camo and every other, it was very cool shoes. Well, they just finished the project. Almost $500,000 later.
Well, it's Duck Dynasty. Anything that they put their name on goes to millions.
It's pretty amazing, but I just was very fascinated because the CEO of Rocket Hub came down to Sarasota, and I met him at a Sarasota Film Commission mixer, and I was just really excited by his enthusiasm and kind of the one-on-one information he gave our group. The thing I also like about Rocket Hub is that it's similar to Indiegogo. Whatever money you raise for your project, you do keep. Versus Kickstarter, you don't.
Where you have to make sure you have to get it all, too. I mean, you have
exactly.
To, right, yeah. I'm actually looking on here. This is very funny because we advocate the use of helmets here on the show. And I'm on Rocket Hub, and here is this product that the title says, "Get rid of hat and helmet hair." The product's name is Great Head, and this is the description. Be comfortable and look great before and after you wear your helmet. This product is a quick acting hair product to fix helmet hair.
Wait, I have to segue into that. Have you seen that Progressive commercial where, of course, the lady who's the star comes in with the bikers, and, of course, they take their helmets off, and they have helmet hair badly?
Yes.
She takes hers off. Beautiful.
That's perfect. Yeah.
She must have been using that product.
Yeah, she was using great head. That's funny.
Okay. Wow.
So do you know when you're going to be, will you let us know here on the show so that we can get the word out about it?
You will hear it here first. Actually, I'm trying to get this finished up and launched with probably by our next show.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
That'd be terrific. So in January.
Yes.
And of course, the Arab Show is the fourth Thursday of every month. And we managed to accomplish that this month, unless a holiday gets in the way. We cannot end this show today without... Oh, by the way, is there a website for Hawk's Flight Productions?
Actually, it is. It's the www.hfladysnickers.com.
Okay, hfladysnickers.com.
Yes.
Got it. We can't end this show without mentioning that voting is still open right now for the USEF Question of the Year nominees, and there are some Arabian people representing this year.
Yes, we are very happy to see that there are actually a couple, Chris and Sonia Bickford, and, of course, the ever-glowing Jimmy Stokowski. So I was very happy to see that. Jim Stokowski has been doing this for over 30 years. And his barn is very, very well known in the industry, especially in English pleasure, country English pleasure. Had a great year this year. The couple, I think you know a little bit more about them because of the driving aspect.
Actually, there are three. I was wrong.
Oh.
I was thinking of Martha Ratner, who's out of Paris, Kentucky, right out of Lexington. And she had she's been around a long time, and she is accomplished in Arabian and half Arabian in the national national show horse divisions. So she's had like I don't know like 50 regional championships and top tens and all of that riding with an English saddle. So it was her I was thinking about. But you're right. There's this couple too that that are in there and they're out of Sherwood, Oregon.
Exactly, and they also do besides Arabians, they also show Frisians in the driving categories.
Huh. Look, boy, you guys are really represented this year.
We are, yes, finally, breaking out.
Now, I was trying to remember, are there any Arabians that are nominated on the horse side? And I was trying to see who that was nominated on the horse side for the USEF Horse of the Year, and I'm trying to locate it. So I'm trying to... Horse of the Year for this year. Of course, they don't never make it easy to find.
Of course not.
No. They make you go through about 12 different steps to get to it. But I don't know whether there was or not. I was trying to remember. There's a driving horse on there, Sam, who we've talked about here on the show.
Oh, here it is. Horse of the Year nominees. Voting is now open. And, of course, now that my laptop, thank God, is virus free. Okay, there's Quarter Horse. No, so far Hanoverian. Ooh, don't see any Arabs this year.
Yeah, I see a Frisian in there. So, yep, no Arabs this year. Looks like you're represented over on the rider side.
That's fine. As long as we're represented. That's all that matters.
There you go. There you go. And, you know, that is a true honor if you get nominated for that and you receive that, because that's out of all the riders that are in this country in all the different disciplines. So, it is a big honor, and it's something that's well worth having on your mantle for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. We're plain running out of time, so we will see you back here next month for another Arab episode, the fourth Thursday of every month. If this is your first time listening to the show, we're glad you're here. We hope that you would join us here on Horses in the Morning every morning. We're on 5 days a week from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time live or recorded immediately after. You can listen to us anytime on our app. If you just go to the iOS or Android app store and search for Horse Radio Network, search for the Horses in the Morning Show. We are the only live morning show for the horse world here every morning, true morning radio. We do silly fun stuff and as well as serious stuff along the way. And we will have a recorded show for you tomorrow, and we'll be back here live with Jamie and Jennifer and the whole gang on Monday morning. So definitely tune back in then. We'll be happy to have you along. You can find all of our past episodes, all 800 of them, at horsesinthemorning.com. And you can find Karen's website at
www.hawksflightfarm.com.
Very good. Thank you, Karen, and we'll talk to you again next month. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Glenn. Thanks.